The Bulldogs Extra Podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's, taking chicken to a whole new level of flavor. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or order online at zaxbys.com/podcast.
From between the hedges at Sanford Stadium to the practice fields, from Stegman Coliseum and wherever else the Bulldogs are playing, it's time to talk Georgia sports.
Touchdown, touchdown, Dogs win it!
From the Athens Banner Herald, here are your hosts, Mark Weiser and Ryan Dennis.
Welcome into the podcast. Anything happened since we last recorded, Ryan?
Let me think back. Yeah, it seemed like something happened, and I'm sure there are a lot of people listening in that are not happy about it. What do you think?
Yeah, I didn't see this happening. I don't think many who came to the Georgia-South Carolina noon kickoff Saturday anticipated even necessarily a competitive game. Maybe the Gamecocks themselves, like, maybe some of them thought they were going to push Georgia. I mean, but they did go to Missouri and get their backsides handed to them a few weeks before. South Carolina wins 20-17 in double overtime, and we'll talk about why the Bulldogs couldn't beat a team it was favored to beat by 21 points, what issues they are carrying over into this Kentucky game this Saturday, and what it means for Georgia's season as a whole. We have not done the podcast until today, which is Tuesday, a little after 1 o'clock as we record this, or actually 2 o'clock. Ryan has been under the weather, and that's why we're doing this now. Ryan, how are you hanging out? How are you feeling? And are you is this in related to Georgia's loss? I know you're a UJ alum.
Yeah.
Did you take it as hard as the rest of the fan base?
No, but you know, it was like you said, shocking. Let me back up. As you can tell, my voice is not all there still. I've got a cough drop in. I've got some tea sitting next to me. And ironically, I felt good Saturday, pretty good. And then it hit me hard on Sunday. It might have had to do with the whole week of Georgia sports, which includes the Falcons, the Braves, and Georgia. Maybe it just a culmination of all that. But I'm feeling a little bit better, even though my voice doesn't totally sound like it. But no, of course, as you know, I mean, we were both sitting there shocked, I guess, in the press box. But work had to go on, and we had to find the stories to tell, which were not very hard to find, considering that I think most of the country was shocked, as we were, that Georgia went down in that one.
Ryan, is that actually a good idea for you to have some tea right near the electronics here of our podcast?
I don't know or care at this moment. It's soothing.
Do you want to share what happened the last time you had some tea? Was it tea?
I know. I'd rather not share that story for purposes that would get me in trouble. Okay, I spilled a little bit of tea on my laptop on Saturday, which didn't help matters, and I had to walk from the stadium over to our office, which isn't that long, but, you know, it's uphill both ways to do it. So, yeah, so that might be why my laptop did not work, and had to come into the office on Saturday right after the game and do all the work, get it done.
Did you see some heavy drinking by Georgia fans as they try to, you know, put the loss behind them?
No, I didn't see. I saw a lot of South Carolina fans, though. I feel like there was more walking down the streets of Athens after that game than there were in the stadium itself, because they were loud and proud, as they should be after that. That big win by their program, probably the biggest in, I mean, well, you go back to that 2010 year that they beat Alabama. That's probably the last time. And probably more shocking than that one, even, I think. They had a really good team that year. I don't think they expected to come into Athens and beat Georgia. So they were full throat, very loud, out on the streets of Athens. And, yeah, I don't blame them at all.
All right. It was about 2 or 3 hours after the game. I'm wrapping up, I think, my second story in the press box. And I heard in the distance somewhere on the bridge some fan yelling, "Kick the damn field goal," or something to that effect. About, I don't know if Dan was in there or not.
That goes along the lines of run the damn ball, I think. You know, yeah, I see those types of hats all around.
We'll get into that a little bit later. Look, usually the teams that I'm a fan of now, I get over a big loss or end of a season pretty fast. You know, you remember life goes on. It's just sports now, obviously.
Whoa, you can get touching a nerve there.
It's kind of, I mean, we all have are passionate about our teams, and I guess my point is that being Tuesday, I would think that most folks have turned their anger of the way the Bulldogs played and maybe turned it towards either the coaching staff or, you know, the game plan and want to see some constructive changes made, and we'll see how that plays out. If you know, James Coley and Kirby Smart are going to tweak the offense, or you know, not run the ball on first and second down so often, or you know how that plays out.
It's interesting. The same old complaints that's been going on for years and years, right, with the offensive coordinator. I mean, Mike Bobo runs too many screens or draws on third and long, or you know, Chaney doesn't throw the tight ends. Or, I mean, always something to nitpick about.
Georgia cornerback Eric Stokes told some reporters yesterday, including Brendan, how do you pronounce Brendan's last name?
Kerner,
yeah, mm-hmm. Of our friends at Dog Post, that Stokes binged watch Friends to forget about the game, I guess, you know, maybe into Sunday, like at 4 a.m., I don't know. But he said Joey was his favorite character, and so I need to ask you, are you a Ross guy? Are you a Rachel fan? Or maybe Phoebe? Where do you stand on that?
Well, you know, I have a group of friends, believe it or not, and we all try to compare who we were, you know, comparatively to Friends. And, I mean, I was hands down Chandler to everybody. I mean, corny jokes, not the best looking guy of the group, you know. That's where I stood. So I guess I'll pick Chandler because, you know, I'm pretty average. And I think his jokes are pretty funny, actually. If you hear anything in the background, by the way.
Yeah, I thought something was about to fall on our head here.
So I think it's UGA, some extension of UGA is moving into our office here, which, believe it or not, we don't...
Not our office, our building.
Our building. We don't own this big old building, as some people seem to still think, on the corner of downtown Athens. We actually only rent one small room out of the back corner of it. So UGA is moving in, and they are making some big changes to the...
I wouldn't call it a small room. It's not like a closet.
Well, you know what I mean. Smaller than the entire building. Yeah. But anyway, so there's some beating and banging going on around our office. So if you hear some hammering, don't fret. It's people working on our building.
Is this Kirby adding some more office space for his support staff? Is that what's going on?
Well, they need something, yeah.
All right. Well, I found it interesting that Stokes, clearly, he was probably born after Friends went off the air, maybe. I don't know. Somebody
No, it was last till 04.
All right. So he was...
He was probably seven or so when it went off. But I mean, didn't he call it? He called it like his favorite show of all time. I mean, Friends got old to me after about three seasons. Did you hang in there with it, or did you ever start it?
I mean, it wasn't my top show or anything. But look, I think it's a pretty effective way to drown your sorrow to do some binge watching. I would go with Mad Men, maybe Billions, or The Sopranos. A second watch of The Sopranos would be good.
I only watched one episode of Mad Men. Should I get back on it? I mean, yeah. I don't know why I got away from it. I was always a Breaking Bad guy, so I watched El Camino last Friday night. Stayed up too late. Had to get up early for that Georgia-South Carolina game. That might be leading to this cold that I have right now. But Seinfeld, I don't know if you know, comes on at midnight every night on Peachtree TV. Watch that often.
Isn't that leaving to a syndication to go to
it's
one
going
of the
to Netflix in 2021, so we got a little while, but I'm going to binge watch that on Netflix when it comes up.
All right, Nick Saban said South Carolina game is an example of a team overlooking an opponent. And
yeah, that caught your eye, didn't it?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, yeah, I think they overlooked it to a certain extent, but I think it was more about Georgia played like they did in the first half.
All game.
Like they did against Tennessee, mm-hmm. like they did against Notre Dame. And I think they thought, look, we've gone through this before. We're good. We have the talent. We can score. And look, if they didn't turn the ball over four times, they probably would have a two-touchdown win. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, most of those were on the, I guess, driving towards South Carolina's end zone. So that didn't help things, obviously. But, I mean, you know, I'm not going to talk about the four turnovers as the end-all and be-all of why Georgia lost that game. I mean, turnovers happen in football. You got to overcome them. But I do think, from an overlooking standpoint, look, I mean, Kirby Smart was on the SEC Nation set at Myers Quad on Friday, and I don't think Paul Feinbaum asked him a single question about the South Carolina game. That's how, you know, everyone kind of took this matchup. Georgia was favored by 21 points, and it was kind of like, well, we'll talk about Georgia football and what they got going on, but in terms of, matchups or if South Carolina was going to do anything, nobody thought that was happening.
Well, you know, I got to thinking, you wrote a big story last week about how the bye week doesn't necessarily mean anything, right? I mean, it's kind of, you know, people, the coaches especially say that coming off a bye week, I would think that they would think that they might have an advantage going up. But do you think ultimately that this might, I mean, you come in, you got a team much fresher. Georgia played a night game at Tennessee, so they had to come in late. They had to get up early to play. South Carolina has 2 weeks to prepare. I mean, Muschamp's a pretty good coach in my eyes. Do you think that really played a difference at the end?
That they had a week off?
Yeah.
I mean,
like I said, you did a big story that proved that it wasn't, and I think.
Well, I mean, that's what the folks that at Valdosta State that did a study of the 2010 season. I mean, I don't think it hurt them. Georgia was coming off. I think it was more about Georgia played a road game at Tennessee at night.
Yeah.
Came back, you know, got in at 1-2 in the morning. I think Ben Cleveland said he went hunting that morning. Didn't even go to sleep.
That's not smart.
The noon kickoff didn't help either.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was more just about the matchup. I mean, look, if this thing was hyped up 3:30 game, does Georgia maybe play it differently? It's still early enough in the season that, like, I mean, you look at Florida now going to South Carolina. I mean, you can see a way that I think LSU had like 10 yards a play on offense. I mean, could South Carolina get something together? You know, if Linsky gets healthy, I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily a slam dunk. Well, Florida win probably is, but
yeah.
Anyway.
Here's the thing to me about the whole, I mean, Georgia only dropped to 10, so there's plenty of opportunity ahead of them, you know, playing Florida, maybe getting a good Missouri team in, beating an Auburn on the road. There's still plenty of opportunity, and I think Georgia has the talent to win any game they're in, so still a lot of opportunities ahead, and only dropping to 10 to me, I mean, they don't have much to worry about, but you can't have an off week like they did last week.
All right, don't forget to shoot us a review at Apple Podcasts or in the Google Podcasts app, and thanks for tuning in each week. This is the Bulldogs Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. All right, some breaking news hit the email as we were wrapping up the last segment. The Chuck Bednarik Awards Player of the Week is in, and congratulations. Oh, I probably don't want to say that. South Carolina's cornerback Israel.
I don't think that's a shock name.
How do you pronounce his last name? Mukawa? Mukama? I need to do a better job of knowing that. All I know is he's a really good player. What is he, 6'4", 6'5", lanky?
Yeah.
Three interceptions, 53-yard pick six. So, look, Javon Kinlaw, I think, got SEC Defensive Lineman of the Week. It was that kind of game for Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of those dudes, let's talk about the offense. There's a lot of hand-wringing about that.
Speaking of big stories you've done, check online Athens right now.
Yeah, I did a story on the offense, and you know it's kind of hard to pinpoint where you want to go with that because there's so many issues. I'm probably going to write about another aspect of it later in the week, but I mean, I wrote about the explosive plays, and it was kind of jarring to me. Georgia was 10th nationally last year in plays of 20 yards or more, and that's mostly because of a very explosive running game they had with Swift and Elijah Holyfield last year, the big offensive line.
Terry Godwin.
Well, he's not a running back.
You know what I mean? As far as downfield.
Yeah, so Georgia is 89th or 83rd now in pass plays of 20 or more yards. And look, they took their shots downfield in this game, and you know Fromm was pressured enough that you know I don't know if he necessarily got the best opportunities to connect downfield, but a lot of it has to do with the wide receivers not being able to get off jams and press coverage. J.J. Holloman tweeted out on Saturday night, I guess it was, and I think he's got a protected account now, so I didn't quote him, but he basically kind of said something to the effect of he wishes he could, you know, be there to help Georgia in this.
Okay.
Obviously, I think he's a difference maker, would have helped to a certain extent, but this is kind of what we thought they were when they lost, you know, Riley Ridley, Mecole Hardman,
mm-hmm.
booted Holloman, Isaac Nauta off the team. You know, you're not seeing George Pickens and Dominique Blaylock game in and game out being consistently able to make plays downfield. Lawrence Cager out in the first half with a shoulder injury and rib injury. And this offense, not very explosive. And Fromm was protected well enough on certain plays, but also faced pressure up the middle particularly.
Yeah, and of course, you add in, I guess, a Matt Landers. Not, you know, a lot of people thought he might come in, be a number one type guy, filling in for Holloman. He hadn't exactly stood out. I noticed Kiaris Jackson, I guess, came back from, you know, he broke his hand in the season opening game. He was in there in crunch time the other day. I don't know how much that had to do with Landers, Cager being out, but I would imagine that played a big factor in that. But yeah, they got to find somebody that can stretch field a little more. I thought it was interesting in your article what Aaron Murray said about the tight ends and how, you know, Werner and Wolf, I mean, they hadn't really done too much this year. Werner especially just kind of surprised me at how little he's done. You know, when your tight ends aren't producing, Murray was saying how the safety can cover an extra receiver and I have to worry about the tight end, stuff like that. So it's things like that. You know, you break it down into small chunks and it just it all kind of filters down and you realize why the receivers might not be able to get away as much. And a lot of that has to do with the guys they lost last year and then the tight ends not producing as much too. But they got a lot to work on. Maybe they need to schematically come up with a couple of different ideas to get people involved. And what was the question yesterday about him not throwing over the middle maybe as much? Have you noticed that at all? I mean, is that a thing that he's not that Jake Fromm isn't throwing to the middle receivers much?
Well, I did break down when I watched the game on replay. I'm just looking at one thing. I'm just pulling up on my phone kind of some of the notes I took. Ninth drive is just the one that's happened to be right in the middle of this document that I just pulled up. First down pass over the middle for 30 yards. That was the one to Cager, right side to Simmons. I haven't broken down entirely, but as I scroll up, they're certainly running the ball up the middle. They do seem to be working the sidelines more, probably a safer route. But it, you know, didn't turn out to be on that pick six. Kirby says it hasn't been an issue. I can't tell you one way or the other. That's not something I've studied. I need to put together the 51 passes and see how many went which way. But I did chart it that way. I just haven't had a chance to count it up. I did chart how many passes went downfield of 20 or more, 25 or more yards. Is that what? I think that's what I did. 25 or more yards. I counted 5 of the 51 in this game. So they are taking their shots. They only completed one of them. One of them, I remember the wide receiver was double covered. Fromm's accuracy wasn't where it needed to be sometimes as well.
I mean, he overthrew a couple guys, but I mean, it wasn't like there was separation, you know. It wasn't like somebody was wide open getting past their man, so.
Yeah, I need to mention, you talked about Aaron Murray. I didn't talk to Aaron for this story. I did listen to, I was curious what he had to say, because he does a podcast with Drew Butler. They do a nice job, and that was his analysis on that podcast. So I just mentioned that and attributed it to the podcast. James Coley, you might remember, if you look at his numbers this year for Georgia's offense, they're actually a tick above in terms of scoring and yards per game than they were last year. Kirby Smart was asked yesterday about James Coley, basically what his opinion is on how Coley's doing as coordinator and what influence Kirby as a guy on the headset and the head coach has in terms of his philosophy, his play calling. And he quickly turned the question into, hey, we're just getting ready for Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Came back and said that, look, our goal is to score, to not turn the ball over, to make explosive plays, and didn't really address James Coley directly. Now, he has said in, I can't remember exactly which game, but I know at least one or two times this season, he said, hey, Coley called a good play. Coley did a good job. I think clearly avoiding the question is telling you that, at least after this game, he wants to see something more. He wants to see something more creative. He wants to see a better plan B.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly something that came out of there feeling that he supported James Coley much on some things. And talking to DeAndre Swift, which we joked about yesterday, we might not get DeAndre again because he was a little more honest than they normally are, to be quite frank with you.
Yeah, he seems pissed off. Yeah. He seems like this is probably his last college season. He wants to get to the playoff. He wants to win championships. And you can't say that DeAndre Swift has been the reason why Georgia's offense is hurting. I mean, he ran 100-plus yards this game on 20-something carries. Mm-hmm. A couple games ago, he had 80 yards receiving, 80 yards rushing. He's a guy that you need to get the ball in his hands. I would endorse, maybe shortening your rotation some places. I know you try to get James Cook into the game. I know you try to, some people are saying, why are you playing Tyler Simmons so much? Why are you playing? Look, Matt Landers ran a wrong route, apparently, from what Jake Fromm said on the interception. He was expecting him to go outside where the ball went, and that's where the DB was, but Landers turned inside.
Well, another thing I think that's frustrating people is that they do continue running up the middle, like you had mentioned. And about the only time they try to go outside, it seems like it's a speed sweep every time with a guy in motion like Cook or even maybe a Simmons coming back across. Or
they didn't do that this game, did they?
They might have ran it a couple times. But, that's the only time it seems like they ever try to run outside. is on stuff like that. And every other
maybe Cook had it. Cook had two carries for 10 yards, but there was no Simmons. There was no D-Rob.
Okay, well, I guess going back to pass games. But anyway, I guess the point I'm getting at is they think they can just line up, you know, their five linemen and blow off, five, six guys. But, I mean, the thing is that other people are putting six, seven, eight in the box, and it's hard to run up the middle all the time. And, of course, without a fullback, too, that's another thing that I know people have griped about is that, you know, it's just pretty much ends up being one-on-one with a running back and maybe a couple linebackers, actually. So, I don't know. They need to, I think, get smarter on the running game and try to get outside maybe a little more than just speed sweeps.
All right, the late game situations continue to be a question for Kirby Smart. He's having to explain his decision making. Now, there was some time that ran off the clock before Georgia called a timeout that they could have used at the
10
end.
10 seconds, I think.
Yeah, so then they also had 8 seconds left and had a chance to kick a 55-yard field goal, but Kirby chose to try to run another play.
False start.
Which, you know, you don't expect receivers to move two guys and get a false start. And so you knock yourself out of field goal range. Then you're left with a 60-yard field goal, which seems very dicey. You know, you don't expect Rodrigo to make it. I was out to dinner Sunday night with the family, and there was a game on where a dude made a 62-yard field goal, I think.
That was
a
pro, yeah.
It was a pro, but Rodrigo's going to be in the NFL next year, probably.
That is true.
Yeah. Now, I don't know necessarily that Rodriguez is going to make a 60-yarder. I'm thinking he's probably not. I'm thinking there's a good chance he's not.
Yeah,
but I think the chances of you hitting a Hail Mary are pretty remote as well, probably worse.
Well, I think a lot of factors came into it. And I think your question yesterday was fair about, you know, does kick six come to mind?
Yeah.
But also, what happened right at the end of the first half? He had a 53-yarder, I think, was blocked.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that entered the mind. I can understand. But, I mean, I think the odds of South Carolina blocking a field goal there and returning it or slimmer than missing the field goal altogether. So, I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't just try it with possibly the nation's best kicker. I think, maybe the guy on the bridge was right.
All right, but getting to Rodrigo, and I know you talked to him. I talked to him a little bit. I was struck by the fact that Kirby gave him a hug after the game, and I asked Rodrigo what Kirby said. He said, basically, I think he said something to the effect of, hey, you're the best kicker in college football, and he still might be. I think I saw preseason. For some reason, today, on Tuesday, there's been like three midseason All-American teams came out, and Rodrigo was still on one of them. What is he now, 12 of 14?
12 of 14,
12
of
14
he's
for the
12
season.
Of 12 going into that.
Yeah, but look, the dude's human, and you forget about that. He kind of had some tough times at the end of last season, and then so maybe he gets this out of his system now. Look, there's a lot of pressure when you have a game on the line and you got to make the field goal there in double overtime.
That's what I thought too. The extra point was a lot of pressure on that too. That he had to hit. You know,
yeah, sure.
As Matt Bryant of the Falcons knows.
How that's what is that? That's 30 something in the NFL.
Yeah, 33, I think, now in NFL.
Yeah. All right, we've talked a lot about the offense. Let's just mention the secondary, which you know is not as much obviously in the line of fire, but they keep continuing to give up big touchdowns, and they're missing Tyson Campbell. Let's acknowledge that. He's got a turf toe, is what Kirby came out and said, kind of describing it. It's more than just a foot injury. It's a turf toe. So Brian Edwards goes 46 yards, and this time it is Devon Wilson that gets victimized on that. So it's becoming...
I think the reason he was in the game was because Mark Webb was out, right? I mean, that's what I figured.
Well, Webb did have a knee injury. I'm not sure in that rotation. Maybe you're right. I think he was.
Looking back on that, I was like, Devon Wilson hadn't played a lot. Pressed in.
Yeah, he plays in some 6 DB sets.
He wouldn't have been in there if Webb was helping.
Yeah, I don't know exactly when the Webb injury happened, but look, Kentucky, I'm not sure what they're doing at their quarterback situation. Lynn Bowden started last game. He is a wide receiver, but they could go back to their other guy and have more of a passing threat. I'm not sure how this is going to play out. But, you know, Florida certainly is going to be able to test that. We'll see when Tyson Campbell can come back. But I think this is like, is it three times this season they've been beaten with a deep ball?
So you think Tennessee, right? On the one double move. Then the South Carolina game. I'm trying to think of the third.
Arkansas State.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that was a deep ball, I guess. But to me, that was more, it was just single coverage, man-to-man, and he just kind of got beat on that. Unlike, seemed like they had double safety, or at least a safety back on the other two, and they both got beat. So I guess it's however you want to view that. The other was just Mark Webb getting beat 1-on-1, I guess.
Now you're forcing me to look up. You know what? It was actually Murray State, 60-yard touchdown pass.
Was it Murray? Okay.
Early in the game.
Yeah.
Will Muschamp, look, he had a coaching decision that also was kind of ridiculed, trying, I guess it was a 57-yarder for a guy that really hadn't made anything that was like beyond 48-ish.
Well, going back earlier in that game, he made like a 52, didn't he? That would have been good from like 62, it seemed like, because I remember
49 yards.
Yeah, that thing, and it hit halfway up the Aflac netting. So maybe that was weighing on his mind too. Dang, he drilled this one early, and it looked like that it had the distance, right? It was just way right.
Yeah, but clearly this was the crowning achievement of Will Muschamp's South Carolina coaching career and probably coaching career in general. And
yeah.
And then Brian McClendon comes in as the offensive coordinator. Look, they ran the ball well, and a third-string quarterback comes in.
He was effective, man. He can, when you think he had him bottled up, he can get away.
Yeah, I mean, you're winning with a third-string quarterback on the road against a top-three team, so credit to South Carolina there. Hey, you know what? South Carolina, they took some hedges with them. They celebrated. Is this something that still gets the fan base riled up?
Of course.
I think, I'd put your frustrations more at the team than necessarily the security staff that didn't protect.
I don't think anybody was mad at security. I mean, they're feeling as disrespectful, and even going back to my student years, was 08, I think Tech came in. Georgia was up big at half and ended up losing, and they took a lot of the hedges. But to me, it's not a it was never an issue as a student/fan of the team because they beat you. To me, if they want to do that, that's fine with me. I think you should be more mad at your team for losing than somebody taking the hedges. I know a big deal was made out of South Carolina the other day, but I'm sorry. That's to me a right. You lose, and that's what they're going to do. So you have to expect it.
All right, be sure and bookmark GeorgiaFloridaRadio.com for Georgia Florida Week as we launch a 24-hour, 7-day-long pop-up radio station celebrating the historic rivalry. And, go check that out when you're making the drive down to Jacksonville. We'll have plenty of content as we relive the highlights of the games that we've seen and through the years and talk about the matchup upcoming, which right now is top 15 matchup, I think. I think Florida... Florida's still in top 10.
They were 9, I think, and Georgia was 10 still.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to that, and we'll go live with that October 26th in preparation for the November 2nd game. And I'm Mark Weiser, Ryan Dennis here, and this is the Bulldogs Podcast presented by Zaxby's. All right, congratulations are in order to Randy Forrester of Athens, who won the latest Wiser Than Weiser picks contest.
I like it. You finally come around to saying it. That's good. You were always
listening. I think it's isn't that named after the fine beer sponsor Budweiser?
they are a sponsor of it. We do appreciate. Hey, we need to get this rolling. My voice is about to completely escape me.
All right, I will say though, I looked at the standings as I made my picks this week. I believe I'm third. That's not bad. Where are you at?
I don't know. I hadn't looked. I'm embarrassed.
All right. Talking about the offensive coordinator as we did earlier. Look, I'm not projecting any kind of changes, but I do know that. Mike Bobo did win a game this past weekend. Colorado State, though, is having a tough time. And there was some talk I heard among those that follow these sorts of things. So some of the media members speculating that if Mike Bobo and Colorado State parted ways, that they didn't expect that he would necessarily want to come back to Georgia and serve as a coordinator role again. But that's something to think about if a change ever is made.
They're good buddies, aren't they?
But I don't know how that would work out. Like you mentioned, no matter who has that job, it doesn't seem to be very popular.
I mean, Georgia's putting up, it seemed like, record-setting numbers when Bobo was here, and still wasn't good enough for the
Cheney
famous.
Had some record-setting numbers.
I know.
Close by last
year. Yeah, but they both suck.
Hey.
That wasn't me. That was a fan talking.
I want to say one thing. I noticed watching the game on replay, which I didn't notice because a lot of it was maybe late in the game, but Nolan Smith is really coming on. Maybe not even showing up in the stats because he wasn't necessarily getting sacks, but he was certainly getting some important pressures late in the game. None of these if you look at these freshman class, besides George Pickens and Dom Blaylock, Who has kind of, you know, lived up to the hype, you think, in terms of a guy that's come in and really been an impact type dude?
You put me on the spot here with that. I don't know. You know, I saw Nakobe in late in the game the other day. I don't think he's had quite an impact that many people. And that's probably attributed more to the play of Tay Crowder.
He's been banged up too. But
yeah, Tay Crowder and also, I mean, Monty Rice have kind of held that spot down. But I did notice that late in the game, Nakobe was in there on that. You know, there hadn't really been, to me. I mean, I think Blaylock's been the one that's even stood out. I mean, maybe a little more than Pickens to me, or as far as lack of expectations. I think a lot of people expected Pickens to come in and be a big star, but I think the way that Blaylock has stepped up, especially once Jackson went down and other things, I think is he maybe opened my eyes a little more than I expected.
Nolan Smith, 7 tackles, 1.5 sacks.
Mm-hmm. I think both those were in the same game, or that 1.5 was in the same game.
And then Lewis Cine had a pick.
I don't count that. That was like 65-7 at that point.
All right, so you put a big asterisk on that. I got you.
Yeah.
All right, we'll talk. I was going to talk a little bit about the SEC East and how it shapes up now, but we'll kind of press for time. We'll catch that next time. I want to mention I went to Stegmania on Friday, and hey, there that was quite a dance party with what was it dude's
name? Blanco Brown.
Yeah, there you go. Both the men's and women's teams were on the court strutting their stuff, you know, Goldberg was there, and the men's team had a 12-minute scrimmage. And look, Anthony Edwards, I'm not going to draw too much of. Well, put it this way: you didn't watch the 12 minutes and go like, "Yeah, what's all that hype about?" I mean, if you were wondering, you know, is this guy, you know, is he something special? You could just tell even on that little thing that this guy is an explosive offensive player. I was surprised by how much he had the ball in his hands, bringing the ball up court, and seems to get along well with his teammates. He's clearly the guy. He's first team all SEC preseason, as voted on by the media, and I had a chance to vote in that and put him on there.
Yeah.
Georgia was picked 9th, but Edwards is going to be with this program for one season, and so you'll have a chance to enjoy him, a special talent. He'll be home against Valdosta State on Friday, and then the real deal starts up in November.
Well, I tell you, I wasn't there with you at Stegmania High School Football, but one of our Bulldog Beat brethren, I guess, said that Tumani Kamara is a guy that might surprise a lot of people. Did he impress you at all, Tumani, the other day? Said he had good build, good length, reminding him of a little bit smaller, maybe Claxton or something like that.
Yeah, he was aggressive. I liked, he was definitely another one of the standouts. I think he's a guy that's from Belgium via, is it a program in Florida maybe? So a lot of newcomers. I think there's 10 on the roster. It'd be interesting. Didn't see that much out of Sevier Wheeler. I'd be curious to see if he ends up, I guess he'll be a backup point guard probably.
How about the transfer?
Rayshon Hammonds looks like his knee.
The foot, I believe.
Yeah, the foot deal. No issue. Not a good night shooting for Tyree Crump.
Shocker.
Yeah. Well, he's streaky. So if he's going to be streaky, this is the one to miss him on. And then, you know, when the games are real, he'll come out and hit him.
That is true. You know, that's what I think people overlook a lot is the fact that Rayshon Hammonds was a top 30 recruit coming out of Norcross in high school. So, you know, get him back in the mix healthy. I think this could be a team that could be a little better than 9th in the SEC.
Really? Who are you putting him ahead of?
I had to go back and look. Not Kentucky, who that was picked to win it all. But, I mean, you know, somebody was saying that Georgia's young. Well, isn't that all college basketball is nowadays, is young teams? And if you can put together a good recruiting class like Georgia did, I mean, you got a shot at maybe, I won't say reaching the tournament just yet, but we'll monitor them the first few games, and especially at the Maui Invitational, and see how that goes. And maybe we'll have a different opinion in about a month of these Georgia Bulldogs.
All right, we'll be back on Thursday for a little bit more of a look at Kentucky, and we'll have a special guest to give us his perspective on the Bulldogs as well. We will talk to you then. Thanks for listening to the Bulldogs Extra Podcast from the Athens Banner-Herald. Drop us a line at mweiser@onlineathens.com or rdennis@onlineathens.com. My Twitter is Mark Weiser. Ryan, what are you at?
At RhinoDennis19.
All right. And the Bulldogs Extra Podcast presented each week by Zaxby's, taking chicken to a whole new level of flavor. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today. Order online at zaxby's.com/podcast.